All right, hopefully our applause is done now. This Thursday, 2 p.m., I'm Fred McMurray. No one else wants to be, which means this must be. Yes, folks, I'm Fred McMurray. I'm with my co-host, Ray Pillar, Elizabeth Stone, and our special woman playing co-host as I sit here back, as everyone can see, in the palm trees of Pismo. Welcome, Rebecca, Ray, and Elizabeth. How are you doing today?
Doing good, Fred. Fred, you sound like you're in a tunnel or a cave. Just thought I'd mention it.
He's kerplunking.
Yeah.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah, but I'm doing great. Sitting here in Aurora. And humid. Unbearably hot and humid. I know that the people in the South say it's only 90. What are you complaining about? But it's terrible outside. Especially when you got to walk around with a mask over your face. So how are you guys?
I'm doing well. I'm all for the no mask wearing. I can't breathe with that silly thing on. But we're fortunate, as you know, I'm in San Diego and beautiful sunny day here, you know, mid-70s.
Oh, nice.
Life is grand. Life is grand.
That's good. That we actually are having fairly temperate weather down here in Alabama. It's only 84, and our humidity is only 56%, which makes for a nice, relatively dry day. But it was over 90 and in the 90s the other day, sunshine, no rain. So it's a little more pleasant to be around right now.
For sure.
So we have a fantastic guest today. And I know you two guys were fighting who's going to introduce her. So I think Rebecca won.
Yes.
I drew the short straw or the long straw, whichever.
The long straw. Yeah. The long straw for sure.
So do we want to bring Angela in?
We do. I'll add her right now, and you can start telling us all about
it. Right. So I do want to talk about our guests. I want you to meet Angela Cote with Franchise Growth Catalyst. Now, if you want to talk with someone who eats, sleeps, and breathes franchising, you want to talk to Angela. Angela is grew up in the franchise space with M&M Food Market, which is an iconic Canadian franchise brand that she helped grow to over 500 franchise locations. So she's done everything from dressing up as Kelly Kebab at grand openings as a child to helping get franchisees trained and up and running across the country. As a young female and also the boss's daughter in the field, Angela learned a lot about what works and what doesn't work when it comes to getting franchisees engaged with growing their businesses. Now, in 2006, Angela launched Franchise Growth Catalyst and began working with early stage franchisors who needed help with where to focus their time, energy, and money to get more streamlined growth. Today, she also offers something which I'm hoping she's going to talk about called Play Bigger Performance Groups, which are, there it is. So hopefully you'll talk about that. So Angela, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's super exciting to be here. This is a fun podcast to be on. I've seen you guys in action.
Oh, okay.
I hope so. I hope it's a fun one.
But we've got to get the preliminaries out of the way now. Angela, where are you and what's the weather like?
Ooh, that's not a bad question. I'm in Canada, so everybody assumes it's probably snowing here, right? But it is not. So it's I'm up in Victoria, British Columbia. So just north of the Olympic Mountains in Washington. And the weather, I don't know if I can convert to Fahrenheit for you, but in Celsius, it's probably about like 17 or so, which is probably whatever it is in Seattle right now and kind of any of the northern states.
Yeah, sounds wonderful because it's hot where I'm at.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just quite beautiful here.
Excellent.
Indeed. So naturally, we have 1,000 questions for you, Angela, as you could probably expect. But I'm wondering if you could backtrack for us a little bit, because you have this franchisor and the franchisee perspective, which is unusual, right? But not only do you have a franchisee-franchisor perspective, you grew up in the world of franchising. Tell us a little bit more about that experience and all that you learned and the fun stuff and the not so fun stuff that went along with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was 5 years old when my dad and mom started the company. And so naturally I was just dragged along and, you know, put in the back of the store with the coloring crayons and the paper to draw and color. But eventually, didn't take long before I got a job. And one of the jobs that I used to do is in the back of the store. We actually, back in those days, this was 1980, 1981, my parents would buy these products from these big suppliers and repackage it in the back of the store. The health department would never allow what we were doing then, nowadays. But my job was to make the boxes, like put them together and then put the sticker that said what the product was, because my parents were smart enough to buy stickers that with a brand on it that would make it look like, you know, it was branded, right? So everything from sitting in the back of the store, to, you know, putting stickers on boxes to dressing up as Kelly Kebab, as you mentioned, my brother was, had to dress up as Too Tall Tex. It's called M&M Food Market, and my dad always had this perception that, you know, Texas and meat, and he loved going down to Texas and just everything being, you know, bigger and better. I think that had part of it. I actually have a surprise for you here. I'm interrupting my own story, but I found this. It's like a souvenir of mine. This is the original logo.
Look at that.
Oh, wow.
So it is a Texas feel. Look at that.
So we actually had this Tex was our mascot. So my brother had to dress up as that at the grand opening. And he would wear big stilts, like workman stilts, my brother would have to wear.
Yeah.
And this is like back in the day. Now it's fortunately family, but good thing we didn't try to hire somebody, because the workers' compensation for having people walk around in Canada in the snow and the ice wouldn't have been good. So anyway, grew up really, you know, it was like a family affair. We would go to these grand openings every month or however often we were opening. And we actually had an RV that the cousins and everybody would pile in. We didn't sleep in the RV. We would get a hotel room, but we would use it to go kind of during the day, during this grand opening thing, to kind of go sneak away and, you know, just have a little bit of a break. But anyway, so, you know, you don't realize it as a young kid, what you're picking up and what you're learning. And I have so many things that I, you know, these days when I talk about community building and the grassroots marketing and the importance of creating a ruckus, you know, creating things to get attention, I realize it all stems back, you know, from those days. So as much as that doesn't sound like business experience, it really was. And so I did everything from, you know, doing all these running around at these grand openings to working in our corporate store, helping train the franchisees as they came in, and maybe actually training them a little bit. And in the late 90s, I went out in the field and worked with franchisees to get them up and running. And so you can only imagine. And this was in Western Canada. When we were expanding to Western Canada, we had an area developer that I worked for. And you can only imagine, yeah, young female boss's daughter, you know, 20 years old, showing up. Hi, I'm here to teach you how to run your business. So you can only imagine, you know, the resistance I was met with. And, you know, these people had invested their $400,000 and were much more experienced in life than I was. So that's where I learned the most, I think, in all of the, like, between the corporate centers, the corporate office, but really in the field, you know, that franchising is all about the people. So I think that's really where I learned the most. Did that for a few years, helped get stores up and running, worked with franchisees on their profitability and their marketing efforts and things, and then became a multi-unit franchisee, brought the chain to a new market, to Vancouver Island, and switched and you know, stepped into the shoes of a franchisee, got my own financing. My dad did co-sign, but he's like, you got to do this yourself, because nobody's going to, or people aren't going to take you seriously. Like, you know, this is your own thing. I'm not helping you. So that was a great opportunity. Had my stores for 18 years. And a few years ago, a number of years ago, I was just doing more networking in my local business community, and people were saying, would you go for coffee with me? I'm trying to think if I should franchise my business, or we've started franchising and our franchisees aren't listening to us. I'm like, I know how to help with that.
That never happened.
Yeah. What? Yeah. So it became apparent to me that there was a need in the market for this type of advising. And there certainly were people already in the space in franchising, but I think I came at it with a little bit of a more, and there's definitely great people. I'm not at all saying, I'm just trying to sort of say what I came at it differently was just a really kind of authentic, using my background approach to really try to help people, you know, in a way that that was going to move them forward and create action for them.
So by the age of 20, if you were putting on labels on boxes since age 5, you'd already had 15 years of experience as a...
Exactly. Well, by then we were getting them pre-printed, so I didn't have to do that job anymore. But, but yes, yeah, you know, people ask or people talk about how long they've been in franchising, and I'm like, I guess 39 years. I'm dating myself now, but yeah, you know, I've been my whole life, whether I liked it or not. And I did try to kind of explore some different. I have worked at a bunch of different jobs along the way. When I was a teenager, I worked at Little Caesars and, you know, tried some different things just to get out of the family business. But then it was really, you know, even just making the decision to come to the island and get the stores or the chain up and running here, we weren't sure if the market was going to be a good market because it's the demographic looked like what we call M&M country. Mm-hmm. And so I think my dad was kind of like, this will be a little safer, because if it doesn't work well, it's just you.
And, just my daughter.
And if anybody can do it, you should be able to do it. So we're pretty sure we're putting a good operator in the market. So that'll be a good test to see. And he's like, go do it. You can always sell them and move on and do something else. But it turned out that the market was ready. I always like to pretend it's because we were awesome, but we were lined up. You know, people knew the brand. It was a 300th store in the chain. So, we surpassed projections and had a good old time with it. But over the years, it wasn't always easy. I mean, we went up and down, but started off well.
So I'm interested to know how, you know, drive, I think, is an interesting thing, and when how people come about having drive or increasing drive or focusing drive. So doing this from a very young age, do you think work ethic and drive were something that were just in you, or did you learn them through the experience? It might be a combination of both, but I don't know how much money it would take to pay one of my children to dress up like Kelly Kebab or Too Tall Tex. You have to be pretty dedicated to do that. You know, certain ages are not going to do that.
Yeah.
But you just, from the way you tell it, you seem to have dived right in early on and been willing to do whatever it took. So how do you explain that quality in yourself? I mean, tell me where you think it comes from.
Well, that's a great question. I love when I get asked a question I haven't been asked before. I don't think I've been asked that one, so that's great. I think probably I'll say like a bit of both, but what, I mean, drive really comes down to, you know, wanting something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm very fortunate for the opportunities that I had. Mm-hmm. But I also feel that and I just mean this in a way to influence other people, hopefully to do the same, that the opportunities were there, but I was also good at seeing them and optimizing them. So, I can go on a little weekend getaway and work, wear a kebab costume, but that sounds kind of fun. And like, I was doing it probably because it was actually fun because my cousins were there, or like there was something driving me to want to do it. But I do think, I mean, I do come from a family of entrepreneurs. My my grandfather, who's 97 and still alive to this day, he's mm-hmm. quite healthy. He used to go to work up until he was about 90. Now, go to work might have meant go read the newspaper in his office, but there's always been a real emphasis on hard work in our family. So, mm-hmm. and a lot of sort of entrepreneurialism and drive and determination, I guess. And so mm-hmm. maybe it's partly innate, but I do think that if it hadn't been there and I would have found the thing I wanted, I would have had that same drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah. One of the words you mentioned was entrepreneurial, and I just wanted to kind of chime in there a little bit. My grandfather, when he came to this country in the late 1800s, opened up one of the first grocery stores on the south side of Chicago. So I wonder, do you think there's a bit of a gene there that could be playing, have some aspect as far as your successes are, plus the drive?
I think there must be, because when I think about like my family, I guess, I think there's a gene there and environment, I guess. Like, so it's, partly the environment you grew up in, but as far as, is it in my DNA? I think it must be, because anything I've ever done, I usually achieve that. So I think there's, not that one's better than the other. I remember, and I mean, to this day, I know people who are like very happy. As long as you're happy and you're feeling mm-hmm. fulfilled with your life, it doesn't matter whether you're working 80 hours a week as a ridiculous entrepreneur or you've got a nice steady job. And like I have lots of friends and back, I was going to say, in our store, I remember this one lady that worked for us, like with one of my employees. She was so good at the role, and she was good at the role, but like people really liked her. And I was like, you'd make a great manager. Like, we were growing from 1 to 2 to 3. And I was like, we'd love to have you step up your responsibility and promote you and that. And she's like, no, I just want to be the worker bee. Mm-hmm. I just want to come to work and mm-hmm. leave and be done. And I think what's most impressive or most important is knowing what does drive you and what you want, and then, working in that realm so that you don't end up unhappy.
Yeah, that's true.
It really is about that self-assessment. You know what's important to you and where you're comfortable and where you're going to perform the best. I think I totally agree with you. It's the old argument that Ray brings up, nature versus nurture, right? Yeah. Argument. And there's great arguments on both sides of that. But I think it comes right down to who are we and where are we most comfortable, because you're right. This woman was comfortable where she was, and she was performing optimally.
Yeah.
And if she got out of that, she probably wouldn't have performed as well or been as content.
Yeah.
Rebecca and I were talking about this yesterday, actually, on one of our segments about why people make mistakes and why isn't it okay to make mistakes and that kind of thing. And our conclusion was, when you're in the role you're supposed to be doing, whether it's leadership or worker bee or support or whatever it is, you don't make mistakes as much because you're happy doing what you're doing and you want to do it well. When you're doing something that's outside your comfort zone, you're probably not going to perform as well. So don't you think knowing that you're in the right partly is part of that drive, because you're where you're supposed to be?
Yeah, and I think
yes, mm-hmm. very true. Very true.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
There's a lot of value in checking that out, like figuring it out, like I think people don't stop to think about that enough. Mm-hmm. Am I in the right spot? And I'm not, like, and to realize they're not stuck in that spot just because they're there and that there's other, you can get out of that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely. I do think that's a critical self-awareness is a biggie,
Always.
Go ahead, Ray.
And once you find that in yourself, you need to help other people find it.
Yeah.
And hopefully those are your employees, because I think it's very important to make sure that you know your employees, you know what they want, and you know how to get what they want for them. And in my case, I feel very blessed. I have wonderful employees, and they've stuck with me for a very long time. So
Well, I think this is a good time to take a break. We've got some commercials that we need to do, and thank the Link Local Network. And then, Angela, I know you've got some exciting things coming up, so when we come back, we're going to ask you about this.
Awesome.
Hello, Fred.
Taking a snooze
here.
Yeah.
Hi.
All right. Here we go. Here we go. He's letting everyone know that the Pillars of Franchising was ranked number one by FeedSpot for podcasting. So if you're not listening, clearly you're missing out.
Yeah, that's right.
But if you're listening, you're smart.
That's right.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you're hearing us,
you're in the know.
Yeah.
So he's got commercials going. I'm not sure if he's got sound.
Yeah, we Fred, if you're listening.
Hey, franchise owners.
Hunter
of Local Marketing. Do you feel like you could use some help keeping up with your social media posts and comments and reviews? Do you wonder if you could be doing more to attract local customers? Are you able to identify new move-ins to your local area? At Westvine, we help franchisees like you reach more local customers through digital marketing. With daily monitoring, creative content, ad placement, and customer data intelligence, we'll get your business in front of the people who want your products or services. We also work with franchisors who need an agency to handle the digital marketing for all of their locations. If you're ready to reach more local customers, give us a call at 805-265-5440 or visit us at westvine.com. That's 805-265-5440 or westvine with a Y.com.
The Franchise Woman is a bi-monthly digital magazine that empowers women as they navigate the franchising industry by providing relevant news, tools, advice, and inspiration. We are a resource for women who are seeking to own their own businesses, improve their existing businesses, find creative solutions, and take advantage of franchise opportunities. We feature women in the business who best exemplify our ideals and have something to teach our readers. In addition to our exclusive articles relating to the female entrepreneur, we also feature brands that are geared for women. Women have become the fastest growing sector in business ownership and have become a powerful, influenceable force fueling the economy. The Franchise Woman will give you the news that is relevant to you to help you navigate the path of successful franchise ownership. By women, for women, and about women, we are the Franchise Woman. Join us today at www.thefranchisewoman.com. All right, welcome back. We are here with Angela Cote, Franchise Growth Catalyst. And Rebecca, since you and Angela have been in cahoots helping her get ready for a big announcement, why don't you introduce or ask her about her big announcement
reveal
coming up in July? Yes.
The big reveal. You know, earlier, Angela, we were talking about performance and when somebody's in the right spot. Role that they tend to perform. I'm also a big believer that there's a zone when you're just slightly outside of the comfort zone, your performance tends to go up. So we can get too comfortable and we get kind of lackadaisical. So, but not so out there that we lose our footing, let's say. And that's a lot of what you're kind of up to with this play bigger performance groups that you're starting for franchise professionals. So can you talk to us a little bit about kind of the big picture, where you're going with these performance groups?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it just became really clear to me that this is no surprise, people, when they collaborate, they learn so much from each other, and there's so many franchisors out there that are like
writing for franchise professionals. So can you?
Should I start over?
Technical issues here.
Yeah, go ahead and start over on that.
There's a lot of franchisors out there that are like, I want to learn from the other franchisors, because why go through all this trial and error when somebody else has already figured it out? And people in franchising are, as we all know here, so willing to share and so collaborative. Mm-hmm. And so not only wanted to be able to reach more people myself and try to help with what I've learned over the years, but also be able to bring people together.
Right.
So, yeah, so I'm launching these Play Bigger performance groups, and I can get into what they are exactly, but the goal is to ultimately have a bunch of them running at one time. But the exciting thing is I want to make them as valuable as possible so that people want to do it and stay with it, and really actionable so that there's accountability and action as a result of attending these groups. So I do run a weekly roundtable for franchisors and people love it and it's great. Accountability, because I intentionally keep that one informal and loose. So you show up or you don't show up, but this is different. This is you show up, you're going to pay for it, you're going to be there, you have some skin in the game, and you're going to work with your peers. So the bigger picture is then to also culminate that into a retreat, so that by the end of maybe mid to later 2021, a retreat where all these groups come together, we do some cross-pollination and help everybody play bigger. So yeah, play bigger. Yeah.
You want to tell us a little more about the name before you get into the details of how it works? Because I love the name Play Bigger. When people ask me what's the greatest piece of advice I've gotten, a lot of times I tell the story of this guy I was working on someone else's magazine that's local. And he said, well, you need another one for this area. Our county's enormous. And he said, up there is different than down here. We're beachy down here. You need another one. And I'm like, well, I don't know if she wants to do two. And he goes, dream bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, those two words were the single greatest. Whenever I feel like, oof, do I want to do that? I always think of that, dream bigger. So tell me about the perspective of Play Bigger, because I think it's a great, great brand.
Thank you. Yeah. And it's funny how the best brands often, like that one just kind of hit me. And I think I kind of brought it to my marketing girl, and she's like, yeah, we got to call the groups that. It's sort of a joint effort, but I think it really encompasses a lot of things, because one of the things my dad used to always say when he was initially building the business was think big, act big.
Mm.
So we need to act. And if I were in my office right now, you'd see that behind me, I would have a canvas picture of a goldfish with like a shark fin on it.
Yeah.
We feel like a goldfish, but we have to act a little bit more like we're bigger and tougher than we are. So, the think big, act big, like I said, they had these labels that they would put on to make it look like they were this big brand, you know, that's ingrained in me to help people think that way, because we're not going to get anywhere if we're just thinking small, right? So it's the bigger thinking combined with the play. I got to give it to Rebecca for recognizing this, because I mean, I know it resonated with me when I heard it, but Rebecca, you were like, that word play is so perfect.
It's perfect.
And maybe do you want to say why you said that?
There was a lot of reasons. One, we tend to learn better in playful environments versus a sit down kind of environment. And a lot of what Angela is going to be creating is in a playful environment, challenging, competitive, out of the box kind of environments, when you think you're playing, but what's happening is you're really learning and stretching your muscles and building the muscle. So the likelihood of performance is going to go up simply because of the attitude of play around that, and because it's a collaborative environment that Angela is creating, we tend to push each other in a playful, competitive, collaborative environment for others' performance to go up, especially if it's fun and it's kind of playful. So I think you combine some beautiful things, collaboration, co-opetition, I'm calling it, or cooperation combined with competition in a playful environment where each person knows our performance goes up because we're accountable and we're playing in the same game. So I thought the name was just like you, Elizabeth. When I first heard it, I'm like, that's spot on. This is
Well, I'm glad you explained it, because you actually explained it a lot better than I would have explained it, Rebecca. But yeah, that's great. And I mean, one of my core values that is so intrinsically true for me is we get more done when we're having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so that and that playfulness is just, it's a part of kind of who I am and what I do and how I put myself out there. So I think it kind of, yeah, just made sense in all those ways.
Yeah.
And I guess also I wanted to make it a little different than a mastermind, because people instantly think of a certain thing with that, whereas this left it a little bit more like I can sort of help shape their thinking on what it is.
But it is part of your branding, because you're known in the franchise space to be playful and to be fun and to be silly and to try things that others would go, oh, that's a little daredevil-y. And so this playfulness, I think, especially in a world that's so serious, business can get pretty serious. Sometimes I think it's going to be healthy. It's going to create some bonding. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how these groups go. So these groups, you're envisioning, what size are these individual play groups?
Yeah, so I've been piloting a group of my core clients, and there just happens to be five of them. And I think five is actually one too many. We're doing really well with the group, but that's just a unique case. I think that the ideal number is going to be four. We're going to go with four, and because I want everybody, so it's a small cohort of four people, and when we meet every 2 weeks for 90 minutes on a Zoom call, I want everybody to have their opportunity to get help with their challenges. And so if there's too many people, then we won't have enough time for everybody to have that focus. So it's going to be a matter of right now I'm planning on more, I'm leaning towards challenge of the day, but within some context, because I feel that when people come to the group, if I say today we're talking about franchise development and somebody's just they don't need any help with that, then they miss out on what they really needed help with. So I think it's more going to be based on the situation for each person, but there will be a structured approach. Okay, so you get your time, and you know, we go around and do that. So that's the core of it. It's like the four people in the group twice a month. One of the big exciting things that's happening with the core group that I have right now is we've got a group chat on our phone, and it's just the five plus me. And so each group will have their own private group chat. And it has been so interesting and fun, bonding, like the things that go into that chat, everything from, you know, I had this challenge with a franchisee and I'm trying to figure out how to deal with it, to does anybody have any tips for how to help their franchisees get, financing during this time, or even like, I'm ready to jump off the ledge here, stop me, you know, help me, support, right? So one of them actually renamed the group the Crying Game. So you can see that there's a level of support, right? So, it's the bonding that's happened in that group, like because of the bi-weekly meetings and then in the group chat. And I mean, these are people that prior to this group would go to a conference and, you know, they know people or whatever, but they just kind of not sure who to go see or whatever. And now it's like we all met at the IFA and we went to a table together, and then we broke off and went to sessions and did networking things, and then we came back together and shared and learned. And so I think the big differentiator with what I'm trying to do is really provide that level of trust and intimacy that you get from those barriers breaking down and really truly being able to help each other.
Yeah. I think this is a big topic, especially in a world that's becoming more virtual, right? And more moats around our homes and more moats around our hearts, where we don't have that same level of connection and intimacy. And we're also in a world where with social media, we're kind of puffed up and we don't see the real person. So if you're in a small group, these play bigger performance groups where you can be raw, you can be honest, you can be authentic and say, I'm hurting, or I got an idea, or you're an idiot, or whatever it is, right? You now have that opportunity because you're coming from the same place of safety, and each of you have a goal to get better at what your goals are. But you have these three other accountability partners that can call you on your stuff if necessary and encourage you as necessary. So sometimes I'm sure there is some crying going on, and other times there's some cheerleading going on.
And as business owners and franchisors and people that are in these jobs where you have, you know, have a lot on your shoulders, I've found my one-on-one clients, like often they get on the call and it's like they need more than anything, sort of like support and therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, they're trying to brush it aside and go, let's just get to business. And I'm like, you know what, if you got to get this off your chest, let's mm-hmm. do that, because you're going to get stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Deal with it and then move on. So the group now offers more of that opportunity to come together. And what I'm really excited about, Rebecca, is that you're excited about it and having come to you with how can we ensure that people in the group are going to get, like, maybe not ensure, but really try to put the right people together. So I'm really excited that your profile is going to be a part of this.
The right groups together on what their needs are, what their values are, what's going on for them in business, so they'll get the most value out of the groups. So, but can someone be in more than one group, Angela?
Ooh, that's a good question. They could be, because what we're working towards is there'll be groups. It'll be somewhat around stage a little bit, but more like we talked about, what are their needs? What are their skills that need to come together? But I just actually piloted today. I'm always doing all new things, I guess. But today I did a version of the Play Bigger group for my current pilot group, their marketing person. So those people are emerging franchisors, and they've all got a marketing person on staff who is trying to figure out the big animal of marketing and franchising. And so today we had a marketing group, and one of the things I hadn't really given a lot of thought to, but we bring people like marketing people and maybe bookkeeping, accounting, and onto our team, and they don't understand franchising. So when franchisees are looking for help from them, they haven't been trained on how to handle, like, how to support franchisees properly. So that's a big theme of this marketing group. So if there's somebody who is, I might have like a franchise development group, but if that person's also a founder, they may be in an emerging mm-hmm. group as well. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. I think initially we'll start with one, but yeah. And then ultimately there's the retreat, so everybody can come together.
One of the major reasons people join a franchise is for that connection.
Mm-hmm.
And if the franchisor doesn't know how to do that, then he's missing a significant part of what he should be doing. And if you could help that franchise or, you know, get to that point, that's fabulous. That's really, really cool.
Thank you. Yeah, I say that a lot, that, you know, we help our franchisees collaborate. What about the franchisor? And that's a big component of why this came about. I was, you know, this group, and especially somebody who's been really helping me is Robert Bruski of Control V. He's an early stage franchisor, and actually you guys have had him on here, so you know him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was saying that, you know, I feel kind of alone, even though I have business partners, but, you know, I want to hear somebody else that's going through the same struggle as I am. Like, the franchisees can collaborate, but what about us franchisors?
Mm-hmm.
So that was really the real premise behind this, is to provide that support.
Right.
Because, yeah, collaboration, that's what franchising is all about.
Well, and nobody wants to be an island. I mean, especially now when we're all working from home, you can begin to feel very isolated. And as a franchisor, the peer group is a little bit different. And so what I was wondering is, in your pilot group, how hard has it been for the franchisors to break down the walls, their own walls, and become vulnerable and really talk and not feel like they need to protect themselves or you know, somebody's going to take an idea? You know, I mean, do you have those issues? How do you break that down?
You know, this group, I think in this situation, I knew them all already. So they were my clients that I'd been working with. And I'd be on a call with one of them and think, oh my gosh, like, Natalie, you got to meet Ruth, you know, and oh my gosh, Jen, you got to meet Robert. And oh, Robert, you got to meet Ruth. And so it comes back to this pairing, I think, this matching thing. So if I would have done it right away, it would have probably not happened as fast, but because I knew their challenges were going to be a fit with each other, I mean, I'm pretty sure, I think it happened really fast that people got comfortable. And I maybe helped that I was, like, and I'm always telling I'm also trying to help them all understand you guys are going through the same thing, you know, like,
right.
And even this marketing roundtable today, oh my goodness, I wasn't sure how it was going to go. It's this pilot thing, right? It's basically a play bigger group for the marketing person. And these folks on this call, by the end, they're like, oh, this is great. I thought we were the only ones that dealt with that problem. No, they just don't realize. So it was so refreshing. So I think it'll come down to fit. If we can get that figured out with the help of Rebecca and Thoracle and just, you know, using our connections and things. Like my roundtable currently, the free one that I do on Wednesdays, I can already see some people. I'm like, that person. I'd like to see if they fit. It's all about fit, you know?
Yeah. It really is all about fit, because if you want each of your players, you want to get benefit from. So it's not that there's something wrong with this person and these other three are great. It's just that one is probably in the wrong group. If we moved him and put him over to this other group, he or she is her performance is going to go up. They're going to collaborate better. They're going to feel more comfortable. I mean, we've all had that experience, right? I was in two situations, and one was a partnership situation and one was an employment situation. And I'm like, love the company, love these people, but I don't think like they do, you know, for this reason or that reason. So I love that you are, putting like-minded, like challenges, like stage of growth, like values types of people together, because Elizabeth's point is so important to get those walls down so you can get to the core issues as quickly as possible. If it takes 6 weeks before the walls come down, you've lost a lot of inertia, a lot of momentum.
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, in my dating book, what if I have a whole chapter on how to get out of it. And it's basically a one-liner. Thank you so much for the nice date, but we are just not a good fit.
Yeah.
So, and it's not a flaw. Like Rebecca said, people are not flawed. They're just not a match. You know, somebody's perfect for everybody. You know, there's somebody out there for everybody. Same thing in this business relationship. So if you find that someone is just a fish out of water in a particular group, is it going to be something that's going to be easy to address in terms of getting them into a group that's a little bit more copacetic with how they are?
Yeah, I mean, I have another core value that I stole from Marie Forleo, if anybody knows who she is, and it's that everything is figure-outable.
Right.
So I'm not going to overthink that right now, but I'm confident that we can figure it out, and that may be starting a new group. You know, I'll do what I have to do. Another component, though, of the like key factor for success is going to be the facilitation.
Yeah.
Like today, the way I facilitated this marketing group, as much as I wanted to dive into their challenges, I was like, I got to get them, this is the first time they met, so I got to get the ice breaking and all that first. So, Rebecca, we talked about, you know, the growth of this potentially could be that a more skilled franchisor or more established or whatever might take on the facilitation.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I'll be very careful about how I do that, because it's got to be done I think we've got to do it carefully again with, you know, making sure right fit and everything. So I think that has a lot to do with getting the wall broken down or brought down. So it's like fit. Fit is everything. And then I thought about it and I kind of wanted to add that, you know, also facilitation and.
Facilitation is going to be so important. You know, from the law of psychology, there are individuals that when they're teaching, they're facilitating, they're offering advisement. You can see statistically, not only does their own performance go up because now they're teaching others and they're in a role that says, okay, I'm observing you, you're my mentor, you're whatever. So the facilitator will start to perform better. And of course, the players will also benefit from someone that's just slightly ahead of them, just slightly, not too far ahead, but slightly ahead, that says, okay, they're only a few steps ahead of me, I can do that. And they're the way they play the game will also tend to go up. So I think it's a valid point, Angela.
The facilitator is an important role in what you're doing, because to be able to recognize two people that have the same needs and can match and talk to each other easily, not only are they learning something, it becomes fun to do. And the facilitator needs to recognize that.
Absolutely. This is a great time to take a quick commercial break. We've got to take our second break of the show. And when we come back, Ray, you will have the next question for Angela. How about that?
Oh, okay.
Ever wonder how successful business people get educated about franchise business options? The Franchise Consulting Company is a group of over 100 franchise professionals with more than 2,000 years of franchise experience. We help our clients select and investigate franchise companies. And like a realtor, our services are free of charge to you. Our fees are paid by the seller. Reach out to us to learn more and get a free copy of the Franchise MBA, the number one bestseller and highest reviewed book on Amazon in the franchise category. Our website is thefranchiseconsultingcompany.com or feel free to call us on 800-321-6072.
All right, so if you go to the website and you fill out our form, you will get a free copy of the Franchise MBA and also free virtual reality gear. So make sure you go there, visit there. Ray, what kind of questions do you have for Angela next?
Well, I'm interested in finding out what franchisor have you, what surprises have you found from the franchisor that they didn't know when they came to, you know, to the table with, you know, your conference?
Just in general?
In general, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a lot. I'll try to keep it to one or two. I think one of the biggest surprises is within the finding franchisees. I think that it's very what I see a lot, and I'm trying to help people and stop this from happening. And with the early stage franchisors I'm talking about right now, more early, is that they get influenced by the industry, what everybody else is doing, and that often includes more established brands or brands that have a lot more capital than they do. And most early stage franchisors don't have capital; they're bootstrapping because they had one unit of their business and somebody said you should franchise this, so they went and did that. And you know, even a customer said it, and then they didn't. You know, they just went and franchised. So. Then I see them following all the traditional ways of getting franchisees that work when you're further along. Mm-hmm. And that I just can't believe how many people miss out on the opportunity to leverage their network within the network to find franchisees. Like I'll ask people, well, do you have a referral program? And they'll say, yeah, we give $1,000 or $5,000 to anybody that helps us get a franchisee signed up. And I'm like, cool, do they know that? When's the last time you talked about that? Like, you actually need to put a system in place. You know, we love systems in franchising. We need a system that you're going to follow to keep that top of mind for everything from, you know, your customers that love you, of course, family, friends, employees, vendors that you use, everybody that's sort of circling around you that loves what you're doing. Like, what is your system for each of those possible, you know, channels to find franchisees? So it's this fact that people, they overlook that. And I'm not blaming them. It's just they get in there and people start saying, oh, you got to spend $10,000 a month, or not, sorry, $10,000 per franchise close. Why aren't we trying to make it better? Like, why aren't we trying to bring that number down and start with our organic opportunities? Even when you have further along with the units, use your franchisees as your sales tool, you know, as brand ambassador.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That's a big one. I think too, just this might sound obvious, but how many people went in without realizing that they were getting out of the business they were in and into the world of franchising, where you're in the business of supporting and finding franchisees now?
That,
yeah, those are a couple of things I think have surprised me that not that I would have known any different myself, but just sure. I just had the opportunity to grow up with it. So, yeah.
Yeah, two excellent points that being a franchisor is not the same as running your own location. And you kind of have to not just change mindset, but you have to learn some skills that maybe you didn't have before.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you were talking about a little bit earlier about this tapping into an influential network, our social capital, I call that. Mm-hmm. I don't think most of us are aware what our social capital is. And if we truly knew how to leverage that and let people know, I'm doing this. If you have a referral, I would be happy to pay you, or simply just show your passion so you can grow it more organically before you spend thousands of dollars on this marketing campaign and that expo and this other thing. Not that those things aren't helpful, but our social capital, we are well connected, especially in this world. And I don't think we really do leverage that. So two really great points. Love it.
It sounds really obvious when you hear them, but most things that are important are not rocket science, but it's more a matter of like stepping back and looking at it differently. And it just tends to go, when I work with franchisors and say like, have you leveraged that? You know, here's the ways we can, they're like, oh my gosh, it's like, I can't believe I didn't think of this, you know, it's not that sad.
Well, and I think with the technology that we have today and the technology that more and more people have learned to use because of the pandemic, so much more is accessible to us that we didn't think was. You know, mm-hmm. I think in terms of just social media and networking and joining groups and finding the places where your people are and connecting mm-hmm. in those ways, I think, you know, you have to find that platform that's going to work for you, and you have to find where your people are living digitally.
Yeah,
to reach them. But it's really, it's to me, it's amazing how accessible people have become. You can talk to almost anybody you want to these days. Yeah. Whether they answer you is a different question, but making sure that they want to answer you and your messaging, you know, I think is something that, you're right, not enough people realize their social capital, like Rebecca was saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what I recommend people do in that situation is to give away a nugget, like an action sort of step or way to handle that, is that people often say, well, but then they say, I'm afraid to I just feel awkward, you know, asking my clients, customers, whatever. And I say, well, what's the purpose like behind your business? Like, get the purpose going and mm-hmm. talk to them, help them understand that they're helping you with that purpose. So for CodeWiz, my coding franchise or client, it's like you're helping change children's lives and helping build their self-esteem through coding. So reach out to them and say, hey, like, does that get you excited? Do you want to help me impact and empower more kids through coding? Well, do you know anybody that might make a good franchisee that hasn't thought about that before that I should reach out to and talk to? You know, and then also throw in the dangle the check with the money incentive.
Yeah.
But also purpose, I find, you know, like it helps. And people add that in, that layer in.
Mm-hmm. I mean, who doesn't want to help another person
love
that
helping.
Purpose has that much passion? If you can effectively communicate, this is what our business does, this is where I'm going, this is my goal, and I need some help, who's not going to help?
Yeah.
And
it helps ego. Pat on the back.
It does. I made that introduction or whatever. And that's a lot of also what these Play Bigger performance groups are, is when you put four people together, you don't have the strength of four, you have the strength of eight, right?
Mm.
You know, and then they, what's a 6 degrees from Kevin Bacon kind of?
We're all actually related.
We're all kind of related. We all have the same DNA. So, you know, tapping into those four players and then who they have and their social capital, pretty soon you got this massive ripple effect, especially mm-hmm. if it's mutual. I'm going to, you know, share my social capital and I'm going to make some introductions and I'm going to empower your ideas. And in turn, you're going to do the same for me. It doesn't get any better than that. That's like kumbaya to me.
Kumbaya with action steps. Right?
Right.
It is.
Actionable.
And speaking of that, Angela, Ray is going to ask you our traditional last question as we're running out of time here and need to wrap up. Ray,
yeah,
have at it.
Sure. So if someone, franchisor, is interested in what you have to offer, what is the best way to get a hold of you?
Thank you. Well, just I think my website is about to be redone, but it's still there. The one that's there is great. It's angelacote.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that's C-O-T-E for Cote. And just find me on anywhere on social media. I'm all over that.
Yeah.
So, they can always reach out by email, just angela@angelacoste.com. And I love having conversations with people, you know, relationship building, no strings attached. Of course, if I can help you and you want my help, let's talk about that. And or if they want to join the group, we're launching that on July 13th. So the website will be fully launched at that point, the new website, and people can go there. And they're actually going to go through the application process. We need to put them through a process, right? So to make sure that it's a fit.
And of course, all that information will be on the Pillars of Franchising webpage. So if someone forgot all that, they can just find our webpage and click on the link.
All right. So Fred has lost sound, which means I get to do the down the rabbit hole question today. So I'm going to try to live up to him. I don't know if I can do it.
Him right now.
Drum roll, yeah. Please. So in the zombie apocalypse, when these zombies are invading the earth, what will Play Bigger's group, what will their role be in fighting off the zombies?
Well, I think that's probably obvious that when we come together as a group, we're going to have a lot more power. And I think we'll probably use brain power because we'll have so much brain power together that we'll come up with some strategic way to coax them away from us or bring them into the group, maybe.
There you go.
Maybe we'll make friends with them somehow. We'll be the first people to figure that out.
Yeah. Great.
A zombie cool. group.
Yeah, you can do your zombie Play Bigger.
Yeah, there'll be one version of that.
Exactly. Well, Angela, thank you so much. This has been really fascinating, and I always enjoy talking to you. So I appreciate
it. No, thank you all. This has been fun. I love this stuff. It's always a treat to get to talk to everybody and share insights and meet more people. Thank you so much.
All right. Keep us posted for sure.
Hey.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Hey.
Thanks, Angela.
Bye.
Pillars of franchising.